has been for me a privilege to attend this session of the Mont Pelerin Society and to be one of the main speakers. Furthermore, I also considered it a privilege to be the last main speaker on the list. This has two advantages. First, I have profited from the enlightening talks of all the former speakers. Second, this gives me the opportunity for thanking Professor Leone for the very fine job he has done in this very wonderful city. A sentiment that I am sure is shared by all of us. And now to my subject. I shall not repeat what I have said in my paper, which perhaps some of you have read. I shall only mention two aspects that are included there and that I consider important for my purpose. A, you must not consider Latin America as one homogeneous unit. Most countries have many advantages and disadvantages. But apart from their common Catholic and Latin heritage, they are very different one from another. B, communist parties are very small in numbers, but they have an active and intelligent elite, which is playing the one strong, genuine, and understandable sentiment that prevails among all our countries. That is nationalism. Communism is acting upon a force and is using a banner that the West itself has created in a narrow-minded attitude of self-destruction. Before I go into this problem, I want to say a few things about Argentina, many of which apply in one way or another to most Latin American countries. After a long struggle for unity, Argentina gave itself a democratic government in the middle of the last century. And in the spirit prevailing in those days, our constitution is copied from the Constitution of the United States. In 1916, we had a universal suffrage, which meant the access to the power of the middle classes. We had a stable government until 1930. The effects of the world crisis, the world economic crisis, which were blamed on the government, brought about a revolution, but we soon went back to constitutional government until the effects of the Second World War and the influence of Western totalitarianism, Nazism, and fascism brought Perón into power under a free election. Perón and his stupid henchmen implanted all the sad techniques of a planned economy: exchange control, price fixing, price controls, government ownership of many enterprises, etc. At the end of 1955, without any war, without any foreign help, just through the sheer courage of its inhabitants, the valiant attitude of the Catholics, and the decisive resolution of some of our soldiers, Argentina overthrew Perón. Since then, both the government of General Aramburu, who restored constitutional government, and the government of President Frondizi have done their best to bring Argentina back into a free economy. Since the end of 1958, we have the freest possible foreign exchange market. We have a stable currency. We are trying to curb inflation and balance the budget. Prices are free, and we have honored all our commitments. I am proud of my government. Of course, we have still many problems to solve. It may be interesting to know that only a very small group, very few people, have brought about this change, which was considered almost impossible. I am only telling you this to prove to you that we are fundamentally a European country with 100% European population, we have suffered most of the up and downs of Europe. And now to the core of my exposition. If we want to combat communism, we should act not under the threat of communism, not because of communism, but because we really believe in a free world. This can only be done if we destroy selfish nationalism, l'union fait la force, if we prevent the zerstückung of the Western world. My fundamental contention, and something I wish to impress on the members of this society, is that aid to underdeveloped countries, monetary order, and even liberalism and democracy may find the right solution, the liberal solution, if we accept as one of our principal goals, if not our principal goal, the integration of our Western world, the full integration of our Western world. This, of course, does not mean that each part of the greater whole should lose its individuality. An integrated Western world could, by its sheer power, stem the rising tide of communism. It would be a Christian attitude, it would be a liberal attitude, and it would be an intelligently selfish attitude. Any other attitude does not seem liberal to me. Now, integration in the economic sphere means three things: free movement of capital, free movement of goods, and free movement of people. The discussion on the gold standard, gold exchange standard, and exchange rates would have a different meaning if we became obsessed by the idea of integration. After all, what we have in mind to a large extent is the integrity of capital in the form of money. Capital is hoarded in the Swiss banks, but can be artificially created through forced savings by inflation or taxation. Capital in the form of money is the only commodity that can be produced artificially and destroyed also artificially without direct confiscation. This will always happen if capital is monopolized. I think we are nearer 1932 than 1929. We have free convertibility, but only for goods, and we limit every day more the flow of goods. Capital movements are restricted. Under those conditions, what is the good of a gold standard? The bottle is not more important than the wine. And in any case, Western world is not limited to the United States and the highly developed European countries. If we would only endeavor to restore confidence and encourage the flow of capital from one country to another, from places where it is relatively abundant and therefore less expensive, to places where it is scarce and very expensive, if we would devise the technical means, the frame that would make this workable, we would be pushing integration. Somebody here, I do not remember who, accused Milton Friedman of being a monetary nationalist. I do not know if he is a monetary nationalist, but I think that, for instance, Mr. Ilau has advanced monetary nationalistic ideas, although I am sure he is not aware of it and would deny it. He opposes German capital exports on the ground that it would create inflationary pressure in Germany. But this would not be so if German capital, instead of being used in Germany, would be invested abroad. At present, no foreign shares can be sold in Germany unless they have very special permission. In England, the same thing is true, and only sterlings derived from foreign investments can be freely invested abroad. Of course, exports of capital might mean a slowing of Germany's development in favor of the development of a lesser developed country. But this is precisely what happened during the last century, when we also had political instability and other risks. I have mentioned Germany only as an example because Mr. Ilau brought up the subject. But this is also true of other highly industrialized countries. In the late 20s, some writers in England complained that if England had invested in the island all the capital she had exported, she would have been much better off. Perhaps she would have lost the wars and there would not have been a British Empire. Under present circumstances, I am grateful for government loans, and I am grateful to the government of the United States. It may be an unfortunate alternative, but it is the only alternative. Incidentally, I thoroughly agree with Professor Brandt on the great danger of sponsoring agrarian reforms, and I would add on trying to plan development as suggested in Punta del Este. But capital movements are not enough. If goods are not allowed free movement as well, the economy of many countries will have to become a self-sufficiency economy, and living standards will be lowered. If the trend towards the formation of large blocks with highly protectionist tariffs for raw materials, agricultural products, and foodstuffs continues, then we should not be surprised if monetary order and any kind of order becomes impossible. And if many countries decide, for the sake of trade with the coercively well-integrated communist bloc, to adopt the neutral or third position, because those countries will feel left out. And worse, nationalistic sentiment and antagonism towards the great Western countries would be encouraged. With reference to the free movement of people, I do not think that there are important hindrances, but the fact that Europe has sort of abandoned the rest of the world, the fact that she is shrinking, pulling back, or folding up in herself, having lost the adventurous and heroic spirit of the past, the fact that she is investing her capital only inside Europe, has resulted in a very different pattern of migrations as compared with the last century and the beginning of the present one. Now Europeans migrate from one country to another in Europe, but few travel across the ocean as before. To end up, Mr. Chairman, I will make a plea to the members of this learned society that we analyze all different problems under the light of the integration of the Western world, that we return to the ambitious dreams of Adam Smith, that we recover the hopeful faith that made the unity of Christianity and enlarged the world, and that we assume that all our fellow men in all Western countries are capable of this achievement. Thank you.